Hi, Kelvin. There we are again. And yeah, you were just nicely explaining that science is a religion or a church in the sense that they don't use Latin, but they use mathematics. They still go by the same dogmatic understanding that if they can describe it in the equation, it must be real. If they can't describe it, it cannot be real. And there is a difficulty when people like you and many others found something else which turns out to work better, that you run into this principle of reduced induced resistance like you find in electric circuits. And I'd like to ask you to essentially shift gear on this, because in the understanding of the unknown and the getting to know the unknown, what I find is that those principles of electrodynamics, which are described in physics, they of course also work in the cells, and all the cell communications are based on that. People like Robert Becker and Bjorn Nordenstrom and so many others have shown that in the body we have this electromagnetic circulation at many levels. In fact, all the body materials function as filters to guide the information flow between the cells, and that in that sense everything that you describe in tetrionics also applies for those electric circulations within the body. But then of course as it describes in its other way the communication between the cells in our body, it likewise, if you flip it inside out, describes the communication between people, because the communication between people is based on that electric information circulation between the organs and the cells in our body. So in that sense, when you described that in the atomic elements, deuterium is the basic starting point for the whole description, and that in essence you're working with a kind of gyroscope with a north pole and south pole, or a plus and a minus like in a battery, then the larger atoms are composed out of adding the pluses and the minus in such a way that they can connect up and form circles and circuits. So it's a logical operation, but it's also a computation in which those primordial elements create the equivalent of, let's call it, a computational motherboard. That atoms in that sense are logic circuit boards, certainly circuit in logic boards. But that also applies to what happens between the cells, and that also applies to what happens between people. So when you describe that principle of induced resistance between people, in a way tetrionics might be able to help understand that. Can you follow the train of thought?
Yeah, on a biological level, for sure. I mean, like, the second law of tetrionics is simply that energy in all its forms seeks equilibrium. Every form of energy has got a plus or a minus charge either side of this one primordial equilateral triangle of energy. And once it was released into the universe, all that happened was all these pluses and minuses tried to interact, and that creates all the motion, it creates all the particles and fields of our universe. The same thing happens after it's built body of atoms and planets, stars and galaxies. It then moved on to what we call biology, and we have matter itself sitting there, or inanimate matter, and then we have animate matter, as in animals, and then we have consciousness. The animate matter has an electromagnetic field around its body, allowing interactions and for a degree of intelligence in their decision making and interactions. But in human beings, it's a higher order. It's what we call our soul, our consciousness, and in the field, as it's formed in the mother's womb, takes on the north-south pole alignment of the mother's body, and then as it's, once it's out of the womb, if it's cuddled predominantly by the mother or by the father, what we call imprinting is just the baby's electromagnetic field developing in harmony with the mother's or the parents or the father's or the grandparents, whatever the social situation is. It starts to exchange information, imprint from one to the other, and this is what I think is behind a lot of the results that you see with twins, where two bodies, identical or not, have their EM fields have developed in the womb at the same time, gone through the same experiences, and they're sharing information from one to the other, which explains their ability to finish each other's sentences and to have a deep psychic connection, if you like, a metaphysical connection that they normal scientists can't explain. It's the EM field that's giving life and intelligence. It gives life to the lower forms of animal. It gives intelligence to creatures such as ourselves. But it's all brought about by this energy in the universe, which is, and bearing in mind the universe is only made up of triangles of energy, and all it's trying to do is all the positives are trying to meet the negatives, and all the negatives are trying to get up with all the positives so it can be neutral. And in the process of that happening, it moves stars, it moves planets around stars, it makes the sun turn matter into energy, it makes the waves and the breezes blow. It does everything we see as physics, all because energy in a field made up of pluses and minuses are constantly trying to equalize themselves, like a battery equalizes over time. But it can never reach a state where all the energy has equalized back out. So modern physics looks at all this and says there's got to be a process to it, and invents mathematics, or invents science, and then Newton invents mathematics, which gave us a lot of answers. All I've done was said, 300 years later, said, well, we've exhausted the mathematics, we're getting off track. How about we do what the Greeks did, and we look at it from a geometric idea? And it's given a whole new rebirth to what we understand. But they do go hand in glove. A lot of people would say that mathematics and geometry and physics and science aren't necessarily related to biology, because they describe different discrete functions of science. I would disagree. I often quote to people that no matter what your theory is, if it's an accurate theory, there should be points of commonality between my geometry and your mathematics, because ultimately we're describing the underlying process from different aspects. So a lot of scientists will discount metaphysical ideas and spiritual ideas because they don't think of immaterial EM fields. Even to this day, astrophysicists will talk about the magnetic fields of the sun, and they don't mention the electric. They seem to think that the magnetic fields push the solar particles out. The magnetic loops on the sun cause the sunspots and things like that. 2 centuries ago, Maxwell pointed out that wherever there is a magnetic dipole or a magnetic field, there is an electric field. You can't have one without the other. And yet, to this day, modern physicists will tell you that there are no electric fields in space. So there's a lot of dogma. And a lot of it comes about from personal perceptions and what they've been taught. And a lot of it comes about also by the way we have learnt our knowledge, i.e. top down rather than bottom up. It makes a big impact on how the perceptions play out and how biased individual groups can be. because I've often had my work called pseudoscience, because they haven't, most of them haven't read my work when they call it that. They just have this reaction that it doesn't gel with what they're taught, so it must be pseudoscience and it's okay for me to say that. So then these same people, given the chance, I'll ask them to show me the definition of pseudoscience. And then I'll ask them to draw a line and write down what relativity theory and what string theory can answer in relation to those test questions on what makes a pseudoscience. And invariably you'll find that relativity and string theories fail. Under the terms of pseudoscience, they themselves are pseudoscience. And yet it's string theorists and relativity mathematicians that will be out there openly calling my work pseudoscience. So it's the kettle calling the pot black in this case. But it all comes about through preconceptions that we originally started with. It's what the mind has been taught and what the mind is willing to let go of in order to expand a bit more in its knowledge. And it's not an easy process, and everyone has their two bobs worth. Everyone wants to say not even wanting to have the word. Sometimes it boils down to people are more comfortable with what they know. It saves them learning something new, and what they know already explains the world in a way that they're comfortable with. They don't need to have it challenged. So why do something or learn something different?
I once did a paper on the pseudoscientist and those. Basically, it was triggered by those people who say that something is unscientific. So I looked into that and realized, well, these people apparently know when something is unscientific. That basically means that they must be unscientists. Because how else can you know if something is unscientific unless you are an unscientist? Because, of course, scientists will know when something is scientific, and the only definition for that is that you're able to model it in language. And when you look into the foundations of the scientific method, then you can see that a scientific object is only and solely a linguistic object. So anytime science calls something an object and calls something objective, then in fact they're saying that it can't be modeled and it can't be described. It doesn't make it real and it doesn't make it true. But so as a result of that analysis, you can then see that there's a totally different understanding in the way that people work with science. And the people who talk about pseudoscience, evidently they're talking about bred competition. They're afraid that somebody else is going to get their job, get their money, get their rank, or maybe get their wife. And there is this competition which puts a total distortion into the field of science. Science, of course, is very severely regulated via money, but it also means that it is not possible to look away from money and understanding how science works. That also includes the scientific social process. There are all kind of people who are doing things for money, and they're anger with others and their problem with understanding others is only about that job security which they're looking for.
Yeah, well, everyone's after the funding dollars. Everyone wants the BMW, the nice house, and pay for their kids' tuition and be able to retire.
Yeah, so once you scrap that out of the equation, then you see that science is a scientific process of sharing information with others. Sometimes others, for whatever reason, most often because they are biased, they have difficulty accept that. But when you look into that dynamic, you see that this principle of induced resistance is exactly the same as you find in Lenz's law in electrodynamic, that basically there is an already established circulation or circuit of electric current in the mind, as a result of which the new information cannot be funneled in, so to say.
Yeah, there's resistance to that change.
And I'd really like to, at some point, sit together in a way like we're doing now and compare notes, because I got into this exploration by the work of a Dutch medical doctor studying physiology, and he was looking into cell communication, and he created something called system pathophysiology. Basically, essentially, very simple. Cell communication always has a feed forward and a feedback loop. If that feed forward feedback loop is stable and continued, then you have the dynamic of health. If it is not continued, you'll have an overshoot or an undershoot, as a result of which you get a process of disease. And another physiological medical doctor, Hans Schley, solved that part and says within the cells they can actually tune the feed forward and the feedback within them, and as a result they can reset the boundary of the system. He described that for the adrenal molecules, the adrenal hormones. Basically there's two types, one of the mineral kind, one of the plant kind, the mineralocorticosteroids and the glycocorticosteroids. The one sort of fossilizes whatever happens in the body, and the other activates, dissolves the membranes in the body. So once you see that's all about resetting those boundaries, you talk about exactly the same principle of the interaction between electricity and magnetism. And then, of course, it all turns out to the focal point of what happens in the wave node where the electrical and the magnetic waves cross, because that's where the system boundary is defined. And once I saw that, I realized that whatever Bert Verveen had described for the principle of health in terms of the physiology had that equally applied for the circulation of the molecules, which are electromagnetic spectra, thus electromagnetic signals. But that means that it applies to the level of mind. And then you can actually see that the interaction between the cells at the electromagnetic level is the substrate, the foundation, the carrier wave of mind. Once that is in place, it is easy to see that whatever happens as a circulation within the body, you can flip that inside out on the outside of the body, because the metabolic cycles in the body flip them outside, and they're the communication cycle between the people. So the pathophysiology was not just pathopsychology, but also the pathosociology, and by extension also the patho-ecology. So Bert Verveen had a wonderful description in which it all came together. But when you talk about the atoms, Galvin, you actually describe what he had, but in terms of the atoms and how atoms build up different layers in the same way as cells split and divide and build organs and organisms. I imagine that it must be quite simple to apply that what Bert Verveen and Hans Schley had found using your formulation to explain why people in science at times fall back on a reflex-driven belief and bias-oriented interpretation of science, and why they cannot understand even though it is evident. Because basically it's the same law of induced resistance plus the system of layers which you so nicely and colorfully describe in these triangles within triangles within triangles. So I'd like to ask you to just sort of think out loud the first ideas which come up on how you might go about that in tetrionics to describe that barrier of acceptance in science in terms of the triangles within triangles and reversals within that dynamic. Can you follow my idea?
Yeah, I'm just making a couple notes here so I don't get off track myself as I talk through on this for you.
Because for what I see, this is the essence of people being able to understand what you do. That their law of induced resistance stops because they are able to unhook from their reflex-driven belief system. The stuff which I described in the Science of Life website under the title of The Bones of Belief. In the same way that our cells create our body, likewise we also create our beliefs and our reflex systems. And if people have this fixed notion of reality, basically you're dealing with a skeleton and no longer with a living being.
From the tetrionics perspective, and I'll step through this as clearly as I can, obviously the biggest step, because we're building from ground up, as I mentioned a few times, the biggest hurdle initially is to understand equilateral energy makes equilateral EM fields, the radio waves and things like that. We often draw them as circles spreading out from the electricity tower, the radio tower. It's a misinterpretation of the actual geometry at work, but that's a side issue. Tetrionics, in its smaller equilateral field, the Planck's constant, or the Planck quanta, has a thing called quantized angular momentum, which I just abbreviate to QAM. All physicists know about it. It's in Planck's constant itself. It's the square meters per second. In electrical engineering, you can draw a triangle. You can draw an inductor. Put it this way: you draw an inductor, which has an electromagnetic inductor, has a north and a south pole, the ends of the coil, and where the wire comes out of that coil, you can bend that to come back to a point which forms an equilateral triangle. When you put energy into it, it forms Planck's constant. It forms a north and a south pole, a magnetic dipole, and an electric field within the triangle, exactly like it does in all my drawings. That's an electrical model of what nature does at the bottom, at the very lowest scale, which is then used to build everything up. The interesting part about this short-circuited quantum inductor, as it's called, is that energy can flow one of two directions through this coil. It flows clockwise. It creates a south-north orientation of the magnetic dipole, and that's what we call negative charge. If it flows anti-clockwise or the reverse direction, the magnetic dipole will change and you'll have a positive charge. So this gives us a positive and a negative triangle. Now we use these positive and negative triangles to replace ones and zeros in information, things like that. But they'll come together side by side and they store energy. The interesting thing about a inductor is that in electrical theory, inductors are referred to as electrical mass, because as you try to add energy to a short-circuited inductor, it will resist the changing energy levels. It has inertia, hence why it's called it electrical mass. And in the earliest days, that gave a lot of people hope that there was some connection between electrical theory and physics. It dropped off, and it's only come out as part of my theory, part of my background training, and the way my theory developed. But the real interesting point is that means that each and every one of these minuscule Planck quanta that make up the entire universe and everything in it, all the forces, all the matter, all the colors, the stars, everything, ourselves included, have these little triangles of energy that resist changes. Now, whether you're accelerating or adding energy or decelerating, taking energy out, they resist those changes. They don't want to change the energy level they start with. So once matter is created out of these triangles, it will sit there forever and day. It stores the energy and it's quite happy. If you want to accelerate a chunk of matter to a velocity, you have to push it. And again, you do that by adding energy, and it will resist changes of energy levels. So in creating Planck's quanta, or Planck's constant, I used omega to symbolize the quantized angular momentum, which resists change. I show, as I just explained then, and in more detail in the illustrations, how that relates to Newton's idea of inertial mass, F equals ma. As you add the force, you take away the force, the mass, the inertial mass resists the changes to that velocity or acceleration that results. What I also discovered was, because matter is different, is separate completely to mass, there's a strange thing that happens which relativity theory gets completely wrong, because they made some assumptions that weren't right. In short, I won't go into in great detail, but the mass, the equilateral masses, geometries that make up the matter topology, the three-dimensional tetrahedrons or platonic solids that we call matter for all the particles, when they constantly move within the matter topology itself, it's going from one part of the topology to the other at very high speed. Well, at the speed of light, basically. And that's what gives us the substance. It's like a very strong blast of wind bending around the thing. It'll feel like a force wall. So that's what makes matter. And the mass, the equilateral triangles that form the topology of mass, of matter, we've got to get it straight, it's tricky to keep straight. The mass, inertial mass, that forms matter topologies are equilateral inductive circuits. It's those, the geometry of the electromagnetic fields in matter topologies that gives us inertial mass. No Higgs boson. I can show you where there's a part of the matter topology that could be interpreted as a Higgs boson, but there's no need for the Higgs boson. The dynamics that gives inertial mass properties to matter is all part and part of what I discussed earlier, the quantized angular momentum of Planck's constant itself. So once we've created matter, when we go to move it, we create a secondary field, which is a kinetic energy field. It's electromagnetic by nature, and I give it a shorthand title of a chem field, K-E-M. It holds the kinetic energy, E equals a half mv squared of motion, plus the magnetic moment that's created. That again should have been a clue to physicists, but they missed it. When a chunk of matter is accelerated, the energy of motion is all stored not in the matter, it's stored in the secondary chem field that points in the direction of motion. So if you like, if you had let's say for argument, you could have a round ball of matter and you wanted it to move in a direction away from you. When you push on it, the energy of that push forms a secondary field, a chem field, like the wake, the bow wake on a boat. Pretend you're pushing it through water. As you go to push it, the energy of that push forms an EM field, a chem field, around the ball of matter, and that's where the energy of motion is stored. That's where all the relativistic changes, relativity, Lorentz contractions, things like that occur. Changes to that chem field is what produces spectral lines, all colors of the rainbows, things like that, they're all produced from like the inertial masses, the chem fields. Now, because chem fields are flat, two-dimensional objects, they only have mass energy geometries. They can't have matter geometries. So, taking that one step further, the chem fields then give us our chemical interactions with chemistry, conveniently, even though the names sound the same, works together there, so that we can bind atoms together to form compounds and molecules. And they also contribute to what I call gem fields, gravitational electromagnetic fields, where the stars and the planets have matter plus electromagnetic fields of motion. And these fields bring about interaction where planets will be attracted to the stars and to each other, things like that. This goes one step further, now that we've covered from the smallest quantum particles right up to stars and galaxies, we can step back one layer and go into biology and talk about what I call BEM fields, bio-electromagnetic fields. And these fields are the electromagnetic fields of heat and motion that surround the matter in our body. You can think of our body as just being another chunk of matter where there's this mass, inertial mass, stored in the matter of the body itself. But the body also generates energy, and it also has this BEM field. This BEM field, as I've discussed with Otto over time, my simple analogy for it is cloud computing. It's the remote server where all the ones and zeros and information about the software is held off-site. In this case, it's wrapped around as part of our body, but it's a cloud of energy, an electromagnetic field around the matter of our body. Our body itself serves a couple purposes. One is to store the quantum processor, the quad core, if you like, which we call our brain. The brain has short-term memory, and it has the ability to receive stimuli from the keyboard, fingers, from the eyes, from the ears, and from all our senses, all get focused into the brain. It connects and communicates with the cloud computing soul, if you like, the BEM field. And this BEM field can store our longer term memories, our essence of who we are, what we are, in a safe format, or a safe arrangement of information, ones and zeros, triangles again. And it's that field that makes every person unique. There'll be given the size of the field and the size, physical size of Planck quanta, I haven't done the numbers on it, but each human soul will be capable of storing a huge amount of long-term information, and each one will be storing it in a different way, which gives us our unique personalities. You can call them our consciousness, you can call them our soul, because ultimately, now that we've discussed the brain and its role to receive information and act on information to create stimuli, and you know that our consciousness, our soul, is in this BEM field, which is an intangible electromagnetic field around our body. Magnetic parts often show up and are described as things like chakras and other features in our bodies. But the body itself then is easy to recognize as simply the Earth's version, God's version, of the Mars rover. It allows us to move about, grab things, touch things, bring them up so that we can scan them with our eyes, taste them with our tongues, our mini labs, exactly what the Mars rover is doing. Look about, figure out what's going. If we need to move to get out of danger, we can move. Store it all, and more importantly, it allows us to ingest matter that is around us, in the form of plants and dead cows and McDonald burgers, whatever we find, we ingest, and our body then puts them through a quick lab that breaks these foodstuffs down into energy, and that energy's purpose is purely to keep that little Earth rover moving about, exploring new things, trying new things out, and seeing what it can figure out. So Otto knows that my analogy often comes back to a robot. Start with these triangles. Once I started building the models, it was very hard not to see what had been thought of as pretty little natural spheres of atoms and things like that suddenly became engineered. Because you're using triangles everywhere, you view the entire universe as being planned and engineered to work the way it works. And where the, I've commented before, you could consider the Earth as a planet where we now have a whole 7 billion Earth rovers roaming about, sampling, discovering, exploring the planet that we're on, storing our information, acting on short-term information, using our brains and our processes, keeping the good stuff in our long-term storage, which is our souls, our consciousness. And when that body fails, or if it's damaged for some reason, we die, long-term information, then in a situation where the body can no longer retain it, and it just releases. And being released from the body, what the EM field does, or what the BEM field does, is it spreads out at the speed of light and goes from being trapped on Earth to spreading out throughout the galaxy at the point of death, complete with all the information about everything we did, all the decisions that we made, our feelings, our emotions, all those things are contained in that cloud drive. It's no longer fixed to the body. But if you take all that, as I've just said it, it's a lot to take in, but if you take it all at that level, the cloud drives that are our conscious souls on Earth are simply EM fields of triangles. And they have a inertial resistance component in their electromagnetic fields themselves. And those fields aren't trapped within our body, they're spread out a distance from our body. And that's why people are attracted to other people. That's why some people can't stand being near other people. That's why you get this deep-seated connection between family members that have grown up around each other, because you've grown accustomed to their electromagnetic fields and the energy vibe that people put off. When you first meet people, you have to discover these forms of the way they think and act and talk, and the gut feeling comes into it again. I'm sure that's a lot to do with how these fields interreact. It may be why men are attracted to women. Maybe there's some basis in the fact that in gay people, the field arrangements are reversed for whatever biological or environmental reason that there is. The field could be reversed, and it could explain their gay tendencies. It could be just another hypothesis that's completely wrong. But at this stage, there's a lot of potential for detecting and studying bioelectromagnetic fields of humans, and how information can be stored in there and things like that, because studying the brain won't give you information about the bioelectromagnetic fields and what the information is in there. And then again, it opens up doors to trying to measure this field and its information and relate it to things like chakras, astral travel, with people being out of their body and then come back into their body for one reason or another. Usually at times when the body has stopped, it was close to death. is the one thing I've learned about tetrionics is the more you dig into it and the more you learn, the more connections there are to ancient technologies and ancient philosophies. There's a lot of information that we've discarded. The prima facie one amongst them all is the equilateral triangle. It's been ignored for 5,000 years of math. Ignored might be a bit strong, but let's face it, I've done everything I've done using equilateral triangles that could have been discovered by anybody, anytime. But we're now into close to 5,000 years of applied mathematics and geometry, and suddenly I can write 5 books that unify all of physics on simple premises, simple geometries. And it ties back into a lot of ancient theology, a lot of ancient philosophy that we have overlooked or, again, rejected out hand as we've come across it and we've become more advanced in our knowledge.
Calvin, can we continue that in the next section of the recording, because we're running into the 40 minutes time barrier here? And this link to how you just addressed the psychology, in fact the sociology, even the sexuality, now you're bringing that into the link of the mystical and the deeper levels of understanding. But I'd like to pick that up in a re-recording. Is that okay?
Yeah, that's okay.
One moment, I'll come right back to you.